Welcome to Talkin' Ball with Scott Tyson and Drew DeArmond. Call into the Neighbors Wealth Management Hotline now, 256-382-0724. That's 256-382-0724. Now, here's Scott and Drew.
As always, this segment of Talking Ball brought to you by the fine folks of Terrell Technical Services Incorporated, the largest environmental health, industrial hygiene, indoor air quality service provider in North Alabama. They are now conducting pre- and post-surface disinfection verification assessments for the COVID-19 virus. TTSI supports school systems, universities, colleges, government facilities, healthcare, elder care, retail, commercial, manufacturing, and industrial facilities. If they can help you by documenting proper disinfection with reoccupancy clearance testing for the COVID-19 virus, give them a call at 256-461-9278. And as we mentioned before the break, this is Mental Awareness Month. Yes. In May. The other day, the Big Ten Conference announcing their plans on how they're going to help their coaches, their players, not just in football, but how they're going to help all of their athletes within the Big Ten Conference combat this, deal with this, give them an avenue for help. And it affects people all around you. And our next guest on the Neighbors Wealth Management Hotline really shared his story, poured his heart out the other day on a, I guess, a coaching clinic.
Yeah, it was
on
Football Scoop. Yes, it was Football Scoop. And, you know, I've known this guy for a few years now. And he was the head football coach and baseball coach at the Randolph School. And he and our good friend Blake Killen, who's now the head football coach there, did a great job building that program. He went on to spend a season at Shoals Christian. And then, the redemption started. But he really shared his story for the first time a few days ago on Football Scoop. And I watched it. It was just riveting to sit there and listen to him. And of course he did a great job of course telling his story, and then also also giving you insight into the coaching profession and how mental awareness and mental wellness is so important in this day and time, not just in the coaching world, but then for everyday life. And he's with us now on the Neighbors Wealth Management Hotline, and that's Nick Flanagan. Coach, it's an honor to have you back on the show. You're with Drew and Scott. Good morning to you.
Good morning, guys. I hope you can hear me. We've got some storms coming through. I live in the Shoals area now. We've got some storms coming through, so hopefully service won't knock out. But, it's great to be with you and Scott this morning. I'm excited to be on here, and I really appreciate you guys having me on.
Yeah, we got you on, and you sound good despite the storms. Coach, we did have a chance to kind of listen to the football or the podcast or the teleconference or the coaching clinic on Football Scoop. First of all, it was not like a normal coaching clinic. Like you said, there was no dry erase board, X's and O's or anything like that. First of all, what made you kind of come up with that idea of talking about a topic that a lot of people want to shy away from?
Well, it was one of those things where when I got the opportunity to speak, I knew that's what I wanted to speak on. Quite frankly, with everyone that came on and talked and some of the college coaches that have done those clinics and the other high school coaches across the state and the country, not just just really across the country that go on Football Scoop and do those clinics, I wasn't real qualified to talk about any X's and O's, if we're just being completely blunt. But this was something that is dear to my heart, and it's something that I really wanted to speak on. And right now, with everything going on, it wasn't planned for it to be right here at the beginning of May, but it just so worked out that it is beginning of May and Mental Health Awareness Month. And, it was just something that is dear to my heart, and it's something that I really finally enjoy speaking on. It's a lot easier to speak about now as kind of the redemption of some of this stuff is taking place. But it was just something that I wanted to do and kind of went into it with the simple mindset of this is there's going to be opinions, and people are going to shy away from these things. But if I can go on there and give it, and as hard as it may be to tell my story and some of the things that may have happened and all the different facets of that story, if it can just reach one person, then it was worth it. And if it can help one person, then it's 100% worth it. And that's where I kind of was. And I just it was time. It's time to tell more than just a select few. It's time to tell the truth. I kind of threw my entire speech. That's what one of the things I did, just telling the truth about it. And so it was, you know, it was just time. And I wanted to get it out there. I wanted to help. That's the whole goal in this is to help someone else. And like I said, it was just it was the right time. And I was very thankful. And you know, and through telling it, put a lot of work into different surveys and whatnot. But when it all boiled down to it, it was just a story of grace and redemption. And of all the bad things that may have, you know, come and gone in between that, it's really the story of how the finally getting head above water and trying to make way of a new life and a new direction of life. And, you know, just really, really happy to have that opportunity, very blessed to have that opportunity. Thankful to get someone here today and share just a little bit of insight. And if anybody gets anything out of this today, you know, it's there's a lot of, you know, for so long it was about me and getting my name and who I, you know, trying to really, it all focused around me in the coaching world. And that was really my main. But with this, now this isn't about me. This is about everyone that's struggling with it. This is about everyone's story. And, you know, through people that have talked to me and reached out, like, this is our story. There's people all across the country that are dealing with this. You would be blown away with the amount of people that have reached out as far as when you say as far as east to the west, I mean, as far west as the very upper part of the state of Washington and as far east and southeast as Miami. So I've had coaches from all over, you know, listen to it, and the message back to them is very the same. Thank you for telling me. I appreciate you, the kind words of telling me thank you, but this isn't about me. I don't want the recognition for this. That's the last thing. I just want this to be out there, and mine is one story of a million. And I hope that this gives someone else the courage to step up and be able to tell their story and know they're not different and know that it's okay to talk about these things. And quite frankly, you need to talk about these things. And so, you know, that's just kind of where it was. That's kind of how it stood.
Well, and it's ironic and it's funny how the Lord kind of guides things, because you come out with your story and then we hear the high-profile one of Brian Maher from Tennessee, who admitted that he was having a lot of anxiety and a lot of, you know, just mental health issues in his mind, and that he nearly committed, you know, suicide in January before his mother called him and fate took, you know, control of it. And now he's getting help. And then we've already seen it happen tragically with Tyler Helinski from Washington State. So, and that's from a player perspective, and you're talking about it from a coaching perspective. But this has happened to, and I've had, someone close to me go through the same thing, not from an athletics perspective, but just in everyday life. So this affects so many people.
Right, it does. It affects so many people. You know, just for instance, you know, we've been on the phone here, and the fact that mental health and especially mental disorders, just since we've been on the phone, you know, here for a few minutes, whatnot, every 40 seconds someone commits suicide. That's an unbelievable number. And so, you know, think of the amount of time we've been on the radio here. And if every 40 seconds someone commits it, you can only imagine how big that number truly is. And it's something that we've got to replace this bad stigma of it. Of, you know, if you're you're weak if you talk about this. Well, no, it's quite. Honestly, it's right the opposite. Being able to open up and communicate it frees you up. And the weakness is holding it in. The weakness is holding it in and not being open and not telling the truth. That's where the weakness is. And being able to open up and admit, hey, I need some help. Hey, I've got to see someone who's qualified in this. That's where I hope this goes, that people seek that help, seek professional help. And Drew and Scott, look where we're at right now. Everyone right now, whether they may want to or not, they're struggling. We're inside, we're cooped up, we're quarantined. You know, everyone is struggling. You know, maybe the first week or two, oh, this is awesome, I'm getting this, and this done. Well, we're on, you know, going on 70 days or so. Maybe it's starting to get one of those things where they're dealing with it even more now than they thought. And quite frankly, they don't know where to even start. So, just getting it out, communicating, telling the truth. That's what this is all about, is just, you know, getting awareness out there and trying to break that stigma. And we're in a coaching world where you don't show weakness. Man, nobody shows weakness. But that no showing weakness and that being the strongest you can be, and it's all about, you know, making sure that on the outside everything is right. Well, that's about what put me in a grave, and not just once but several times. And when I say that, I say that very openly, that I was very, very close to burning it all down and being completely done. And I'm so thankful that I'm able to be on this radio today and say that I was able to come through that. And I hope that someone, you know, whoever may be listening to this, whether it be live or whether it be, recorded, I hope that if they are and they're in the midst of that, they know that there's a way out. And even if you're in the middle of it and hadn't gotten that bad, there's a way that it doesn't have to be that fast. And there's things that you can do where it doesn't have to be that fast. And you don't have to be that statistic, that statistic of one of those people that one every 40 seconds, you know, that dies of suicide. You don't have to be that statistic. 800,000 people, Drew and Scott, you know, die from suicide every year. It's really, really insane to really look at. And you look at what's going on now with the coronavirus and the numbers that we're seeing. 800,000 people a year are dying from suicide. It needs to be addressed. It needs to be open. When I did our survey, and I talked to Drew, I talked to you about this, but I did a survey, and this was just from head coaches, and this was from 6A and 7A head coaches across the state. And I did this survey of just asking them some things, and you would be shocked at the numbers. And it was completely anonymous. I obviously sent an email out to people and to the coaches, but I made it where I didn't know what their response were. No one else that took the survey would know who even participated. But people were actually truthful in that, and they told the truth. And the numbers were quite frightening, if I can be dishonest. It was really frightening. So that's just something that, you know, we have to bring awareness to. And as coaches, every day we tell our kids to be honest, tell us the truth, you know, prepare themselves. How many of us coaches go in and we tell our kids the story that there's going to be a time on a Friday night, and it's going to be a play, and we don't know when it's going to be, but it's going to make the difference in the game. We tell them that all the time. Well, there's also a situation where you're going to be in that situation where you got to make some decisions too. And if you're not mentally okay and you're suffering from these things and you haven't gotten the help, or you haven't, you know, opened up and just talked to a friend about what's going on, well, are you okay to actually be in that moment? If your kids are preparing for that moment in a game to win a Friday night football game, well, are you prepared in that moment? And so that's just what I wanted to see. And I can kind of share some numbers pretty quickly.
Go ahead.
But, you know, 100% of the coaches that were surveyed has coached someone that's had mental health struggles, 100% of these coaches. So everyone's dealing with it in the coaching profession, whether it be students, whether it be coaches that work for you, everyone's dealing with it. 80% of the coaches surveyed that know someone personally who deals with an actual mental illness. Now, I'm not talking about, as I said the other day, mental health and mental illness are two different things. We all have mental health. Our mental health is our well-being. Our mental health is what makes us, you know, everyday life makes us function, make right decisions. We all have mental health. But now mental health illnesses or mental illnesses or mental disorders is just something as, you know, anxiety, depression, bipolar, schizophrenia. And man, I'm saying those words and someone right now has immediately just said, well, I'm not in that category. I'm not bipolar and I'm not schizophrenic. Well, that's okay. But have you struggled from anxiety? Have you struggled from depression? Are these days where, hey, you don't want to get out of bed? You know, it's raining this morning. Do you really want to get out of bed? And are you still struggling with something that may have happened 5 years ago and it's still on your mind, still bothering you? And 80% of coaches know someone personally who deals with an actual mental illness. And then 70% of the coaches surveyed believe there is still a bad stigma associated with discussing it. So if 70% are saying that, and that means that they're a big majority that think that it's a bad thing. Well, you realize it's a bad stigma when you went through it or saw someone go through it and you realize, hey, that guy or that woman or that person, they are really strong and a good person, but they still dealt with it. Man, they're not a bad person. Just because they have anxiety, depression, or they're bipolar or whatnot, not a bad person. And there should be no bad stigma associated with it, because it's just something that it is what it is, and we have to accept it and we have to work on it. And then, and it's 50%, it's actually 62% of the coaches surveyed openly said that they deal with anxiety or depression regularly. That's a big number. That's a really big number. So, you know, and then I just kind of started, and I like to crunch numbers and whatnot, but when you kind of look at all those things, let's just say this, okay? There's over, let me get to my slide, I'm sorry about that, but there's over 300 coaches, head coaches in the state of Alabama. And this was just head coaches that I did survey. It wasn't, you know, assistants, but right about approximately 300 head coaches in the state. Out of that, I mean, 60 plus head coaches are struggling with some kind of mental illness, whether it be anxiety, depression, you know, bipolar, schizophrenia, et cetera. It's 20%. 20%. And like I said the other day, if you knew that a certain play was going to work 20% of the time, now that may not be a huge number on a Friday night, 20%, but I guarantee you Monday through Thursday, whatever that was that's going to work, you know, 20%. You know for a fact 20%. Well, you would do a lot to prepare for that. You would rep whatever that play was. You would rep whatever that defense coverage was. You would rep whatever that blitz was. You would rep it. Well, why is it not the same with your mental health? Why would you not do the same thing about making sure that you're prepared in your own mind? So that is one, you know, that's one thing that you are prepared is with whatever it is, whatever your anxiety or depression. And that all starts with just, it sounds like, okay, well, I deal with it, but what do I do? Well, that's where I was. That's where my story was for a long time. That's what I did. I didn't know where to go, and I'm so thankful to be able to talk about it today. But I was so close to not being able to. And people and friends and family close to me will tell you that I was really close to not being able to tell you that I was going to be one of those 800,000 people that just die from suicide.
Yeah.
Because that's where my life. That's the only option I saw, because I didn't know who to tell or where to even go. And it's just, you know, and hey, that's tough to say. And someone, you know, whether people think, you know, why would you even admit that? Well, that's when I started to heal, is when I finally opened up and told the truth about it. That's when my true healing process started. Two Januaries ago, I was the head football coach at Randolph. We had a lot of success. I had some great people there, and they were really, really good to me. I can't say enough about how good they were to me to give some young punk that was arrogant and it was all about me at the time, and it was all about how I could make myself look. And I had some great people who, looking at now, I could have went to. You mentioned Blake Killen. Blake Killen's still a close friend of mine. And what I had to do though throughout all this is I had to tell him the truth, but also had to apologize for not telling him earlier. Because I know now that I could have went to him. Blake Davenport, who was my athletic director, I know now that I could have went to him. I didn't think it at the time because it was all about me. I didn't think I couldn't do that. Well, I know now that I could have. I know now that those guys are man of God that I could have went to. And my head of school, Jay Rainey, which, again, took a chance on a 24-year-old punk. I mean, I can't say that enough, that didn't understand anything. But he did take a chance. And looking at it now, I was trying so hard to impress them, to show them that I was mature and I was man enough to do all these things. Well, the reality of it was I wasn't. And I needed those people's help. And when I finally, 2 Januaries ago, decided, okay, I need to seek professional help to deal with whatever's going on in my mind. Because, you know, the alcohol, A, was something that I didn't want to be. I didn't want those thoughts anymore. So I just, and I drowned my whatever was going on in my mind, anxiety, depression, all these thoughts, I drowned it with alcohol. And so therefore it just, alcohol was just became, when I needed to get out of life, that's where I went. But when you're having these thoughts all the time, well, if I'm totally having to drown those, slowly alcohol became my life, because I never was in reality. And, I never was. And it finally took my dad, you know, whether it be what all the things that could happen. And I said, there's a lot of facets to the story. There's a lot of ugly to the story. if I were to tell every story, Drew and Scott, I'd have to have my own talk show because it would take five
right.
years. It would. But finally, 2 Januarys ago, my dad, you know, set me down and said, Nick, something's going on and you need to go see someone and you have to be open. And that was so humiliating to have to take that and to have to walk in and to talk to someone and tell someone my problems. Are you kidding me? Man, I don't have problems. I'm way too strong for this. But then when I started to open up and I started to get the actual help I needed, the help I needed and started to talk and tell the truth, man, that's where the healing began. And it was really cool because I was out of coaching 2 Januarys ago.
Yes.
And if we're being real honest, nobody wanted to hire me. I mean, we're talking about a guy that rumors of he's an alcoholic. Oh, he's done this. Oh, you don't want this. And nobody wanted to hire me. And I probably wouldn't have wanted to hire me either. But when I got the help I needed, I started to see freedom. And I started to realize that, hey, you know, some of these things I can start to change. And the narrative in my life can change. But it's going to take me working and being honest and communicating about this. And you know, I've told you all that bad about alcohol and depression. But now here's the story that people need to hear. We all go through stuff. Every single one of us goes through stuff. Mine may have been mental health or my mental illness and my anxiety and my depression and whatnot. That may have been what mine was, but it doesn't just have to be that. We all go through things. Every single one of us. Everyone's got a story. And when we start to tell the truth and communicate and we start to find a way to make it out and get with people close and get with people, professionals who know how to deal with these things, we can start to see healing. And if anyone gets anything from this, man, it's the grace of this. You know, God tells us that we're going to go through struggle. You know, he never said that we're not going to. There's going to be times where there's going to be battles. And, hey, we may not win the battle. But I promise you, God said he's going to win the war. We may not win the battle, but I promise you he'll win the war. But you got to continue to find people and surround yourself with good people who will pour into you the things that are true and that are honest and that are genuine. And that's where this grace starts. Even though I got the mental help I needed back 2 Januarys ago and I got to seeing someone and regularly. And hey, and I don't mind, man, I'm a grown man that will tell you I had to walk in and tell a 5'2" woman all my dirty secrets and all my horrible things. And I'm sitting on the couch and there's a puzzle to my left and there's tissue and everything. I'm thinking, where am I at? What have I done? But now that openness and that honesty, it gave me a life that I never had. And it gave me a purpose. And what it did was it, much as I messed up and as much as I got in my own head, and there's a lot of people that they do these things, that their story is very similar. But as much as I got in my own, when I started to realize that, hey, it's not about me, and it's about how I can take this and learn from it and get better and help someone, that's when I started to see freedom. I mean, that's when my life started to change. And I can't say enough about the people in my life that helped me get to that point. Because, again, I'll get the retweets of this was me talking. I'll get the, hey, you did a good job and whatnot. And I understand that. But truthfully, this is my story, but I didn't pull myself out of this. I didn't. I had people around me that helped me get out of this because we saw how it happened when I did it on my own. We saw what happened there, and it wasn't real good. Ending up in a hospital bed and, man, moments away from just saying, I'm done. Literally, when I say moments away, that's when I finally could open up and tell that. That's when life started to change. And that's when I started to become who God really wanted me to be. That's when I finally started to find peace. And that's what I searched for years, was just peace. And that story of grace and redemption, that's because of who I surrounded myself with. That's because of me being open. And I'll tell you a story of this, because, man, there's no sense in us telling all the bad things. But I'll tell you the good things here. After I got the help I needed and finally started talking to someone and openly and talking to someone regularly, you know, again, I started regularly talking to someone and talking to family and finally realized that, hey, my family's not the enemy. My wife's not the enemy. This whole stigma in my mind that, hey, they'll never understand, they'll never get it. No. They actually did, and they didn't judge me. They didn't think any differently. If it wasn't for my mom and dad, if it wasn't for my brother and my sister, and if it wasn't for my wife, my beautiful wife, who stood by when not many women will stand by. Let me tell you, not many would stand by. A lot of them would throw the towel in, but she never did. A lot of parents would have thrown the towel in, but they never did. A lot of brothers and sisters would have thrown the towel in, but they never did. They stuck by, and they knew that hopefully one day, no matter what, this will get better. That's when things started to change, because I was open with them. I told the truth. When I was having thoughts of whether it be suicide or depression, I told it. I got it out. That's when things got better. And by doing that, it got to the story of the day. So back in July, it was July 28th, actually. It was Sunday. And I went to church, and when I got home, I still was out of coaching. No one, you know, there was a couple opportunities maybe, but it just wasn't right, because I wasn't sure if I needed to be back in it ever. Because I was getting better mentally, but I didn't know if that's what caused it. But I realized that was my purpose. God had called me to be a coach. I was called to make a difference and to make an impact in young men's lives. That's what I truly believe is my calling. But July 28th was a Sunday afternoon, and I walked in, and I hadn't told anyone in my family or not, because I was getting better, and it was things were getting back on track. But I finally told. I came home and I told my wife. I said, I want to get back into coaching. I don't know where, and I don't know how. And I know that it may not even be in the state, because a lot of people probably will not take a chance on me. And the story will really, really kind of sounds really crazy and maybe made up, but it's true. But that afternoon when I told her that, and it said, this is what I'm going to do, that afternoon I got a text. And I got a text from my offense coordinator, Coach Clint Wilson, just to ask how I was doing. The next day, Coach Wade Waldrop called me. And from there, I got back in it. And, hey, it wasn't a big role. I was just an assistant on the offensive side, and it was perfect. So I didn't have a position group. But I was able to get back into it. And I was able to get under some guys who didn't judge and didn't care. But there were men who went through things. There were men who had been through it and been through that. But that's what I needed. I needed to be with guys like that. There was no coincidence that I ended up at James Clements High School. There was no coincidence that I got to work for, in my mind, one of if not the best head coach in the state of Alabama. There's no coincidence, because God made it to where I was able to get there. So all the things that I had ruined and burned to the ground, all the tornado that I had caused, God started to rebuild. He started to flatten that surface. And now, don't get me wrong, when a tornado comes through, you don't rebuild it overnight. It's taken a lot of time. It has. But, man, it's been so amazing to just be free and to see it, because my family, my wife and I, we're closer than we've ever been. We've always been best friends, but we're closer than we've ever been. A year after I decided to get help for my mental health and for my mental illness, when I decided a year later on January 20th, was to pass, I welcomed a baby girl into the I was able to welcome a brand new beautiful baby girl. I wouldn't have been able to do that ever had I not got the help I had. And now I get to be a father. Now I get to be a father to a beautiful baby girl. And one day when she grows up, if this is something she deals with, I get to help her. And I get to be there for her. And I promise you, if I hadn't got the help and I hadn't have just been honest and told the truth, I'd have never been in the situation. And if I would have, if those 3 or 4 seconds before, if I would have just went ahead and done what I thought was the right thing to do in that time, in that dark place, if I would have been one of those 800,000 people that die from suicide every year, if I would have been one of those people, I wouldn't have got to be there on January 20th and saw that baby girl come to this world. And I wouldn't have been able to be a father today. And I wouldn't have been able to work for people like Wade Waldrop. And I wouldn't be able to tell the truth. So it's just one of those things where, if you're out there and you're struggling and you're listening to this, there is a way out. Don't let it get to the point that I did. And don't let it be 6 and 7 years of dealing with things. Man, you can get out now. You can tell the truth. You can seek help. I promise you, you'll be surprised people that will not judge you. And the people who do judge you and you think that so what? We're not here to worry about the opinion of man. We're not. That's not why we're here on this earth. The opinion of man does not matter. However, when we tell the truth, it sets us free. It sets us completely free, and it starts to open up a whole new life that you may have never known about. You know, for me, and it may not be like this for everyone, but for me, when I finally decided to get close to the Creator, to the one who did create me, who did let those mental things go on in my mind, when I decided to get close, man, that's when everything started to seem so much more understandable and so much more peaceful. Now, does that mean that I haven't went through things? Yeah, I probably went through some of the worst things since I've been sober and since I've had help. However, I was able to get through them, and I didn't have to go back to a bottle. I didn't have to go back to the thought of, hey, it's time to pull out in front of this car. It's time to run off this hill. It's time to drink until you're completely so intoxicated that you'll never wake up. You know, when you get close, this is just a statement. I can't take, you know, credit for this, but if you want to know something, you go to who created it, right? If you want to know something about the zone defense, I go to Coach Arnberg, whose dad created it when he was a defense coordinator at Miami. Coach Arnberg works with us at James Clinton. If I want to know why my mind is the way it is, and I want to know why my body and the things that I'm doing is the way it is, well, I'm going to go to the one who created me and who let those things happen, but also the one who'll pull me out, and he'll take it and he'll wipe that slate clean. He'll start to build. That tornado that came through that wiped everything out, he'll bulldoze it down, he'll give you a clean slate, and you'll start to work. Again, there's going to be a lot of different things. You're going to have battles. You're not going to always win those battles. But there's a war, too, and I promise you, you will win the war. If you go to someone, you go to the person who created you. Again, it's just amazing how I can kind of go from one thing to another so quickly. As bad as it can be, in the flip of a coin, it can be right the opposite. And if someone is on here listening to this, and someone is on here and you're going through this, there's a way out. There's people you can talk to. There are avenues that you can get help. And if maybe you're in the midst of where I was, had lost it all, I mean, I was on the brink of not only losing jobs and money and, you know, vehicles, and I was on the brink of losing my life. I was on the brink of losing every healthy relationship I ever had. I was on the brink of losing my family. I was very close to being one of not only those statistics of someone who died, but before that, probably being someone that you would see as you go through on an underpass. And I truly mean that, because I didn't see any other life. But man, when I finally decided to get the help and talk about it, everything changed and everything was different. And I'll take you back to that July 28th when I said that, you know, James Clemens, it all worked out. Within 2 weeks, Coach Waldrop, there was a science position that was open because of an overflow in classrooms. And I have a biology degree. I'm a biology guy. And I got to go in. I got to sit down. And I got to talk to Dr. Brian Clayton, who's the principal at James Clinton. And I told him the truth. I didn't hold back. I didn't. With him and Coach Waldrop and Coach, I didn't hold back. I told him the truth because I didn't want any surprises. I wanted them to know, because I didn't want any surprises to be the what I thought the response would be was so much different than what the response would be. Dr. Brian Clayton was unbelievable to open up and say that, hey, people go through stuff and make mistakes. And I'm here to tell you, and he point blank told me, I'm here to tell you that it can be different. And I don't mind giving people second chances. And Coach Walter, the same way, I don't mind giving people second chances. Well, those are the people that I want to learn from. Those are the people that I want to work under. Those are the people that I would go to war with, because those are the people who do not judge, who do not care that, hey, I don't drink. You know, coaches drink all the time. Well, I don't. And I don't because of this. It's not because I don't think sometimes, well, surely I can do it responsibly. Yeah, maybe. But I don't have that urge or into anymore, because I know now that that's not going to help. It may suppress it for a little while, but it's not going to help.
Right.
It's only going to make it worse. And for me, and where I'm at now, you know, over a year and a half later, or, you know, where I'm at now looking at it, what it would cost now to go back to that life, and whatever it may be, whatever excitement may be, to go back to some of that lifestyle, it's not worth it. It's not worth losing what I have now. It's not worth losing the peace of mind. It's not worth losing my family again. It's not worth losing the trust of my wife and my mom and my dad. And it's not worth losing the relationship again that I've had to rebuild with my brother, who's my best friend. It's not worth losing that again. It's just not. And it's also not worth knowing that, hey, what if I go back, what that road is going to lead me right back to. It's just not. And it's one of those things that you don't have to get to that point. That you don't have to get to it. You can get out of it. Don't get to the point where you're having to do those things. And let me be the one that had to do some of those things and rebuild. It's not fun, but I'll do it. And I don't mind doing it.
Coach, I got to ask you.
Get out.
I hate to interrupt. I want to ask you, though, real fast. The first time that you shared your message, and whether it be with your wife or whether it be how much relief and redemption and maybe just the weight off your shoulders that you felt saying it for the first time. Because the hardest part for a lot of us, whether it be men, children, or whatever, is just letting somebody know and telling what we're going through. But how much relief did you feel coming off your shoulders?
Amazing. It was unbelievable. It was actually that next day, July 29th, that Monday after that, after I decided to get back in. I picked up the phone and called one of my close friends in this profession, which is John Summerall, who's at Kentucky now. I told John the truth. I told him what had happened. I told him everything. I spilt it out, and it was a relief. And then the next thing you know, I told Coach Waldrop. The next thing you know, I told Coach Woodson. I told people around me. I told Dr. Clayton. I told it, and it just became something that was very freeing. It's just very freeing to tell the truth, because now no one looks at me differently. And I know we don't have a lot of time left, but
Coach, you take as much time as you need. This has been probably the most powerful interview that we have had. I mean, the message has just been outstanding.
Yes. I mean, it's going to help a lot of people,
and,
Coach.
And that's the thing. And like I said at the beginning, man, I don't want credit for this. I promise you, Nick Flanagan is not the reason I'm sitting here today. If it was left up to me and my own devices, I know exactly what road I would be right back down on. Okay, I know that. But the freeing part of telling the truth, yeah, it's open. And here's the thing. I hope now that people trust more, and they can see, hey, I can trust that guy more. And even kids. I want our kids to know that I can trust that guy more, because, hey, he's not just telling me something that he has heard or he thinks is the right thing. He's lived it. You know, I've lived it. I've lived with those suicidal thoughts. I've lived with those alcohol problems. I've lived with those things. And I hope that now kids will see that. And I hope that they understand that. They can come to me with it. I don't judge anybody anymore. I was for so long, there were so many things that I thought I was so different from someone. I'm no different from anyone else. I don't judge anyone. There's no difference in my eyes anymore. And that's what the truth is you've got to be able to get to that point. Because when you get to that point, then you can start fulfilling your purpose, right? I want to make a difference in kids' lives, but I only want to make a difference in kids who are hard workers and this and that. Well, no, I want to make a difference in every single kid's life I come in contact with. Not just, I want to make a difference in the classroom. I want to make a difference on the football field. I want to make a difference in your colleagues' life. Well, that's the reason when you tell the truth and people see that, it just shows that, hey, he's been through it. He's lived through it. And when everyone asks, how did you make it? My first response is, hey, I didn't do anything. The only thing I did was give up control. And when I did give up control, my life changed. That's the only thing that I did was to make that one step. And if you're out there and you want to, there's one thing you can do, and it's called surrender. Surrender. Get it out. Tell the truth. Surrender. And find help. Get help. Figure out whatever it is, wherever it is you need to be getting the help from, and figure it out and tell the truth and be open with it. On a football stance, because a lot of football coaches may listen to this and may be hearing this, and some of this may be the first time. You know, there may have been some situations throughout the past year and a half. There have been some opportunities to maybe go somewhere else or get a different title or be in a position of authority as a head again. Those things are not something I chase anymore, because they're not life. If anybody's noticed anything out of this quarantine and noticed man, life goes on. Life goes on without 5 days a week being at a field house for 8 to 10 hours. Life goes on. There's more to life than sports. Is it something we love? Yes, but it's an avenue for us to serve. It's an avenue and a platform for us to make a difference in the world. And it's an avenue for us to make this world a better place. And it's an avenue for us to help guys who are on this road, are going down this bad path, and to get them on the right path. To get on the path at 16, 17, 18 years old, before they're 28 years old and, you know, on the brink of suicide. It's an avenue to go to, and it's an avenue for them to trust you when they may get to that point in life that they can call you, because they know you're not going to judge them. And again, if you want to really reach people and have a platform, then it starts with everyone, not just the guys who are going to start for us on a Friday night. And I've learned that, and I've learned how to be a man, and I've learned how to be a good coach, and I've learned how to respect the people around you. And I've learned that because I've been able to work for the best. And I've been able to, and again, I'm not doing this to try to polish an apple, and I'm not doing this to try to build up something. That's not it. That nobody at James Clemens needs my voice. The record for the Wade Waldrop's record and what he's done at that place speaks for itself. He sure doesn't need my voice, which is not much at all. He doesn't need me to brag. But I will tell you, in my life, that is what I've needed. I've needed to be there. We've got guys on our staff, and real quickly I'll say it, because I'd be silly if I said that this wasn't one of the biggest parts of the story. There are guys on that staff that I am so close to now that I can tell the truth, that the other day, that there may have been, you know, the other day I was going through stuff, and I picked up the phone and was able to call guys, and they didn't judge me, and they didn't go into detail and tell me how bad their life was or give me some Tommy Topper story. They listened, they helped, they were there. And that's what's so cool. And going back to what I said about the title, that's not what I chase now. Because when you get peace, you realize that you're not always having to look ahead. The cliche saying of be where your feet are. We've heard Nick Saban say it, and we've all told our kids that. But how many times as coaches do we live that? How many times? That's what I finally was able to do for this year. And it was the best year I've ever had in my life coaching football, 100%, and may be the best that I ever will, because I was where my feet were. I was able to become really close to some guys. You know, Coach Cyrus Swears, Coach Swear, he was able to show me how to push kids to the max, but also how to love them. You know, he was showed me how to love them, but he also showed me, too, how to run things in a manner that kids will buy in and they'll understand. Coach Woodson, unbelievably organized, showed me how to be organized, but also showed me how key priorities, making prioritize in your life. We got another guy in our offensive staff room, Coach Wally McKellar, who I look at is, we say all the time, he's the GOAT, you know, the greatest of all time. He knows more offensive football. He has forgotten probably more football than I'll ever know. He's unbelievable. And then you look at a guy, Aaron James, who I've been able to work with, who showed me, hey, this is what a dad looks like. It's leaving this field home and going home. And I've been able to take things that he showed, and I've been able to go home and be a dad. And then on the flip side, you want to talk about knowledge? We've got a defensive staff right now that I'll put up against anyone in the state. I was able to just pick our defense coordinator, Steve Davis' brain. He is unbelievably smart. But you want to know what else he is? He told me. He told me one Friday night, and you probably don't remember it. He said, listen, because I said, I'm having a daughter and I'm nervous. He said, listen, follow what Coach Waldrop's done. Follow what Coach McKellar's done. Lean on them for advice. And he doesn't even probably remember saying that, but that has been such a big key in my life of just taking that advice and leaning on them. You got guys like Juwan Simpson, who's played football for a long time. And I walk in, I realize it's Juwan, and I'm scared to death to say anything. And you realize he's a great – he played at Alabama, went on to play forever in CFL and won the Grey Cup. And I was nervous, right? I was nervous when I saw him. Oh, my goodness, I'm on the staff with Coach Juwan Simpson. And I realized, hey, this is a normal dude that also will show you how to live life and how to be a good father and how to be where you're supposed to be. You got guys like Jarrett Holley who, you know, may not say a whole lot, and you may think that, okay, well – what he's able to open up to me and show me, you know, just reach out. How are you doing? Hey, if you need me, I'm here to help. And also pretty dang good at coaching some box play. Pretty dang good. Could be a defense coordinator at any level and a head coach at any level. He's pretty stinking good and pretty smart. got guys like Austin Burke that's just, you know, fallen in there and just done a great job of teaching things and also been a good friend and been someone I could be open with. I'm not a guy that talks on the phone a lot, right? And that's something that bothers me is I don't like to talk a lot on the phone. And I was able to openly be honest with him and say, hey, I don't talk on the phone a lot. Can you just text me more? Absolutely, coach. And you know what? He didn't think, well, you prick. You're not going to talk to me on the phone, you prick. No. Yeah, absolutely, coach. And things like that. And, you know, and those are just ones that I would mention. Those are just guys that come to mind. They're our entire staff. If anything, I'm the least qualified from our head coach, Wade Walder, probably all the way down to our JV coaches. And our ninth grade coaches. We've got ninth grade coaches that have been head coaches and coached at the highest of levels. And I'm sitting here walking in, and I realize as much knowledge as they have about football, it's not football that they're here for. They're here to make a difference in kids' lives. And when I realize that's what this profession's about and that's what this calling is about, and I was able to learn from them, well, that title chasing and that head coach title and that coordinator title, man, all that is a back. It's a back thought now. Because what really matters in my life is to be the best, is to be a Christian and show that in my everyday walk. The next thing is I'm going to be a husband, I'm going to be a great, and I'm going to come home, and I'm going to be a husband at home, and I'm going to do things. I'm going to be and after that, and these are in priority, these are where my priorities stand. I'm going to be a Christian, I'm going to be a husband, and I'm going to be a father. I'm going to be a father to this daughter, and I'm not going to hold these things back. I'm going to tell her the truth. She wants to know what happened with Dad. Here's what happened with Dad. And here's the road this will take you down. And it's not going to be embarrassing. It doesn't embarrass me anymore like it did. And I'm going to tell that. And the next thing is I'm going to make a different classroom because I'm an educator. And whatever classroom that is, whether that be PE, health, science, bio, whatever that is, I want to make a difference in the kids in my classroom. And then I'm a coach. And, man, when you put those things in priority, and you put them in priority, and you start to live them, and you start to live by those priorities every day, amazing how that title chasing kind of becomes a back burner, because it doesn't matter. Because I, you know, the two days in your head coaching world, the day that's the most exciting and the day that's the most terrifying. The day that's the most exciting is when you're named the head coach and everyone finds out. And there's an AL.com article and there's an interview with you and there's all these things and everyone's patting you on the back, telling you congratulations. Man, that's awesome. You know what the next day is? You wake up and you say, what am I going to do? And you're scared to death because all the praise is over now. What am I going to do? And if you're not ready for it and you've not learned around men that I'm getting to learn around right now, then you're not ready. Then you're not. And in my case, I failed those guys that were my assistant coaches. I failed them because I wasn't able. They didn't get to see the life that they should be living. And I am so thankful every day. And it's something that I'm thankful for every day that I'm able to learn under men that I'm able to learn under. Because wherever roads may take me, wherever that may be, wherever God leads me, I know now that I can lean on people that are right here with me. I can lean on those people. And, man, they are going to be there, and they're going to, when I have those problems, they show me. Wade Waldrop is a living proof of how to do it the right way, how to be there for your coaches. And I've never told this, and I'll say it on the radio, but I don't even know if any of our assistant coaches know this. But I've been there now since July, or the end of July. And since that time, you know, in meeting and going to things, not one time have I heard Coach Waldrop say the word my when he refers to anything about our program. He doesn't say my guys, my this, my that. I did do that as a head coach. My assistant coaches. See, I mean, you know, my this, my no. Not one time have I heard him say the word my, and I can't begin to tell you how powerful that's been, because it's not a my. He doesn't say, you know, we don't work under him. We all know we do, because we know there's one voice in this program, and that's his, and there's no egos. We leave those egos when we walk in that field, we leave them at the door. But in retrospect, but right the opposite, he never says it's his. He doesn't ever take the credit for it. Never all his. And that's so cool to see a head coach that had the success that he's had. And I would be willing to bet if you go through anybody in the state of Alabama, whether it be state championship or not, look at what this guy has done at James Clemens in the time he's been there, and you compare it to anybody else in the time they've been somewhere. it's unbelievable and unmatched by anything else in the state. And I truly believe that. And you can ask anybody around, they truly believe that. But not one time has he taken credit for it and said, my.
Well, Coach,
that's the mark of a great head coach.
Coach, we hate to interrupt, but man, we do have to take a break here.
Yeah, we do, and we wanted to let you tell your story.
Yeah.
And it's probably the most powerful testimony we've ever heard on this show, and I've been doing this 5 years, but we appreciate you for doing it. I've already received text messages that people have been glued to it the entire time, so I know you're going to help someone, and even if you help one person, it's worth it.
Yes.
And you're going to help many more than that, but we are very proud of what you've done, and we just thank you and from the bottom of our hearts for coming on and doing this today. We know you did it with Football Scoop as well, but it's very powerful to do it in your local community, and we thank you, and we want you to continue to get you and your family to be safe and do well and be well, and we thank you for just doing this today. It's going to help so many people.
Yeah, we know how hard it was to tell this message and to tell it in front of everybody, so I mean, that is amazing to you to do that, and shows
thank you, guys. So sorry I got to go on. It's just,
no, I mean,
no,
this
that is,
the stage was yours, Coach.
Well, I am sorry. And thank you guys for allowing me to have this platform to share. I hope it helps someone. And, guys, thank you for what you do for sports in North Alabama. Yeah, I love your show, and thank you for having me on.
Thank you, Coach. We really appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Coach Nick Flanagan, assistant football coach for Wade Waldrop, and the irony is we've featured Wade Waldrop many times. We featured him recently because of Logan Stenberg being drafted. I featured Clint Woodfin a couple of times when he was at Huntsville High. I know him well. He's a great man. So they have a great staff over there, and they're special people at James Clemens. But Nick Flanagan, his story is so powerful. But I know we need to pay some bills, so we need to go on a break here,
take
Scott.
A break. That's about all we can do is take a break because we cannot do justice from what Nick Flanagan just told us.
And
we'll
catch up with Jason Caldwell on Monday.
Yeah.
But, we had to let Coach have this hour, and we really appreciate him for coming on. But stay with us here on 97.7 The Zone.